Welcome to Brand New Doctor. My name is Rolla Carajo, doctor turned healthcare graphic designer and brand strategist. This is the show where we share big ideas and look for inspiration in all kinds of places to help you grow a fulfilling career in healthcare. Following a path to success is one thing, but carving your own is another. So this is for you if you want to go beyond book smart. Before we dive into this week's episode, I just want to give you a quick update about the launch of Ann Matter last week. I have to start by saying thank you so much to everyone for your support, whether you were able to make it or not. I have really been feeling the love from everyone this week on social media. But to those of you who came, you guys really made it a special evening. I still cannot get over it. Quick special shout out before I forget to Vanessa. I know you've been listening to this podcast and you made a special effort to come. And honestly, it just made my week. It was incredible. We all took part in a workshop about humanizing healthcare brands, which gave a little insight into the branding approaches at Ann Matter. And it was really all about how we can connect with our audiences on a deeper level and help them to get more out of their experience. So we worked together on a brief for a fictional health brand called Busy Bowl, working title, which is a personalized meal planning platform for busy families with children with diet-controlled conditions like type 1 diabetes or celiac. I shared a few fun activities to help us understand our audience better, shape our tone of voice, and think outside of the box for ways to build a trusting relationship with our audience. So if two heads are better than one, you can imagine what it was like with about 30 people in the room. So many ideas, so many discussions, post-it notes just flying everywhere. People were putting so much effort and thought into it. I could not have asked for more. Honestly, by the end of it, we were asking ourselves how we could turn Busy Bowl into a real thing. It was the best way to launch Ann Matter. So just thank you. Thank you so much. All of this is to say, there is so much power in community. I have seen it for myself. So I would love to do more events, perhaps in person or online. And I'd love for more of you guys to get involved and come along. So let me know your thoughts and your suggestions. Follow the links in the show notes to message me on LinkedIn or Instagram. And if you haven't already, check out the Ann Matter website and my new personal website at rollacarajo.com. I cannot wait to hear from you, but for now, onwards with the episode. Today, I have the pleasure of speaking with Dr. Dupe Burgess, the founder and CEO of Bloomful. Bloomful are doing great things using patient-reported data to help clinicians deliver personalized gynecological care and help women to take ownership over their health. Dupe brings a wealth of experience to Bloomful. She started her career as a doctor working at some of the busiest NHS hospitals in the UK, then transitioned into strategy consulting at BCG. But what led her to embark on this path to founding Bloomful was her vision for true health equity and a commitment to addressing the systemic neglect of women's health. She is an inspiring leader, writing and speaking about healthcare equity, women's health, the startup space, and motherhood. And what's more, she's bravely navigating the intersection of these topics with vulnerability and insight. So welcome to the show, Dupe. I'm so excited to have you join me today.
Thank you for having me. It's really, really great to be here. Thank you for having me on.
Yeah, of course. You are carving your own path and you're making the world a better place while you do it. So I think the listeners will be really inspired to hear all about it. So let's dive right into the questions. So I was reading about your journey on your blog, which was talking about what led you to founding Bloomful and what you've learned since. And first of all, what I love about it is that you speak so openly and candidly about the challenges you face and how you've overcome them. What I also love is that you started the piece with some conclusions about what you know about yourself. And I always advocate that we are guided by our values, especially when we're talking about decisions that have a big impact on our lives. So you had three conclusions, one of which was that you are mission-driven to do meaningful and impactful things. You have a strong drive to lead, and you're driven by the idea of creating something long-lasting from nothing. And so I think for anyone who's unclear about what they want, it would be really, really helpful for them to hear how you arrived at these conclusions. So can we talk about that a little bit?
Yeah. Firstly, thank you for such a kind introduction. And yeah, it has been somewhat of a journey. And I think when it comes to understanding ourselves and what we want from a career, what we think we can feel we can offer the world, there is a level of self-reflection that you have to do at some point, even if it's done subconsciously, to understand where to place yourself in the world. And it's not necessarily that there is a strict framework for this, I don't think, or a very defined way of coming to those conclusions. For me, it's been a matter of really going down a particular path, seeing how it's worked, understanding why perhaps it didn't work or it did, and taking those conclusions and formulating those into what my personal values have been. So, you know, as you mentioned, I started my career as a doctor. And I remember that when I was younger and I went into, one of the reasons I wanted to go into medicine was because I wanted to help people. You know, that's what everyone wrote on their UCAS forms back there. We want to help people. We want to be a positive change or impact positive change on people. And that was definitely important to me. And coming from the kind of background that I did, where my dad is a doctor and I have a medical family, and I went to the kind of school where people did go into medicine and law and engineering and some of those big kind of well-respected professions, it felt like the lowest hanging fruit to go down that path. And when I was in the profession and I started working as a doctor, and I realized that actually there is something missing for me personally in this day to day, in so much as I felt somewhat restricted. I always felt I had something in me that I wasn't able to showcase in that working environment. I've always felt I've got a lot to offer the world, and also was very curious and had a lot I wanted to learn about the world. And so I realized that that wasn't necessarily the right place for me to spend the rest of my career. And so, yeah, that's why I diverted and sort of took a slightly different pathway, came off that particular treadmill and went onto a different pathway, which was consulting. And there I was able to really understand more broadly about the world and commerce and business and how everything functions and what the operating system for healthcare looks like, and gain more of a toolkit in terms of how to solve problems. After a few years of consulting, I realized that, yeah, that's good, but actually I want to get back to doing more meaningful work. And I miss that aspect of medicine. I didn't miss being a doctor on the shop floor. I didn't miss being on the wards, but I missed doing something that I felt was super impactful. So then it becomes, okay, so how do you amalgamate all of that into a job or a career or a position that you can feel fulfilled, you can get fulfillment in terms of those different values? And that's where entrepreneurship really came into it for me. It's a way for me to do impactful work, which is very important for my personal motivation, but also do it in a way that works for me, and in a scalable way, which is also important for me. So the answer to your question, I think, is more around, for me at least, has been more around testing, really, when it comes down to it. Putting your situations, even if they seem like very long, drawn out roads, like medicine can feel. You know, some people said to me, gosh, you've studied for a long time for you to change. And I look at it as, I don't see it as a waste of time. It's information and knowledge that I've taken in and used to carve out the next part of the journey. But testing things out and going into medicine in the corporate world has enabled me to really understand where I fit and what really works for me. And I think that's something that people should really try and remember, especially early on in their career. It's not necessarily going to be one very straight path. If it is, that's great, if that's what you want. But actually, there's something about each part of the journey being a stepping stone, and it being more of it being more about the journey per se, rather than a particular destination.
I think that is really, I mean, it's, in a way, it's something that, it sounds kind of obvious. You have to see what is out there in order for you to be able to know. You have to test things out. But I think it really bears repeating, because ultimately, the way that the healthcare kind of careers are set up a lot of the time is like, you have to know before you begin doing something. And the opposite is true, that actually you can't know everything. And I also completely, I love what you said about it's not a waste of time. It's just a way for you to explore, essentially, because, you know, a big investment of your time, particularly with your career, can feel like, oh, that's just like completely, you know, a waste of time if it didn't work out exactly how you wanted it to. But I know from my experience as well, I get the exact same thing where people say, you put this much time into it and now you're doing something completely different. And I would have never gotten to this point had I not done the piece before, had I not gone through everything and tried out everything. So thank you for sharing. And also just the point that there's no formula to follow either. I really try not to subscribe anything on this podcast because I think everyone is completely different. So I guess I wanted to ask you a little bit more about just the vision that you had for healthcare for women that you saw that inspired you to start Bloomful. How did that kind of come to you? I know you had some experience in gynae on the wards as well.
I think it's been multifaceted in terms of what my experience has been. Firstly, obviously clinically, being able to see as a doctor that this is an area that really is broken for patients, seeing women going through very, very long, chaotic, protracted journeys to get the care that they need and not really understanding why this is an area where the journeys can be so long versus so many other areas of healthcare, oncology, you know, diabetes, so many areas where things happen really quickly. And of course, there are nuances there. Some of those are more life-threatening than others. And a lot of gynecology is seen as quote-unquote benign because, you know, it won't kill you in the immediate sense. But it does have a big impact on women's quality of life, their mental well-being, their ability to work, to have children. And that has an effect to the economy at the end of the day. But yeah, I would see it in the clinical setting. And then when I went to BCG in consulting, I could see, I guess, some of the more operational problems that healthcare services had. And then when I left consulting, it was around the time of COVID. And I think there was a lot of discussion in the year 2020 in terms of inequality in general. The impact of COVID on different groups. There was, you know, post-George Floyd Black Lives Matter movement. And I think we all, or at least I, was much more aware of just in general the inequalities that we all face. And that took me down the rabbit hole of really dissecting the women's health issue and what it is, what it's all about. I was also pregnant that year, so I was more hyper aware of my health perhaps than I would have been. And I was understanding more about these statistics, especially around Black women and pregnancy and chances of death, you know, compared to other racial groups. And, you know, it's quite scary when you're in that situation, you're reading a lot about it and you're absorbing what information that can make you feel quite helpless. But also it motivated me and it made me feel that I don't want this for my daughter that I'm pregnant with. You know, I don't want this for the future. And so that was a big driving factor for me to really get started. And after she was born, which was October that year, I really decided to go full pelt and just immerse myself in all things startup and the whole landscape and just really understanding how to solve it. So, you know, I think it's been, yeah, very, very multifactorial, very multidimensional in terms of how I've landed here. But it's everything from there through to being consulting, through to being a woman, a Black woman myself, but also a mum as well. So I feel personally that I've got a very broad lens on them. And I think that's really helpful for actually solving it.
Yeah, you know, I was going to say the same thing. It seems to me that you are the perfect person to have started Bloomful, to be doing what you're doing with all of these different perspectives that you can bring to it. Was that the feeling that you had at the beginning, or was that, did that kind of become apparent to you over time as you were doing it?
Yeah, I think it became apparent to me over time. I think I definitely felt that it's going to take a person that really can have a more visceral understanding of this problem to solve it, or at least to try and solve it, or to be at the forefront of trying to solve it. So I think that definitely gives me an advantage. I do see some men in this space. Men are affected by default of being having mothers and sisters and you know, partners and things like that. But I definitely understood that more as I went through this journey.
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm curious, because you mentioned that you had a toolbox, so to speak, from when you started working at BCG to help you kind of start solving these problems and bringing an idea to life. Can you share some of those kind of frameworks at a very high level that actually helped you to make Bloomful happen?
Not so much a framework, but a principle in general for me been to be as hypothesis driven as you can. So in consulting, you're very much taught to put a stake in the ground, have a view, and then aim to prove or disprove that particular hypothesis. And that to me is a thing that we are not taught to do in medicine. Medicine's very, you know, you're starting with symptoms and you're putting the stories together based on pattern recognition, and then it's very sort of protocol driven from there. So it's a kind of different way, top down versus bottom up way of thinking. And I really had to learn that in consulting. Sometimes you're not going to have the answer. You're not going to recognize a pattern, but you do have to have an intelligent thought about how it might be solved and commit to that hypothesis and then go out to figure out whether that is true or not true. And if it isn't true, pivot to a different hypothesis that, you know, that you can formulate from there. So I think that's been the biggest key, is not being welded to a particular solution, not being welded to a particular idea, but more so welded to the overall kind of mission, vision, and testing out a number of different hypotheses. I think along the same note, being very, very nimble in how you're operating. I think some of the issues that people have in building businesses in general, and certainly startups, is that you can get quite stuck in what you're doing, get quite stuck in the solution that you think it requires. And it's difficult sometimes to see you can't see the wood for the trees. But I think just trying to be as nimble as possible, try many, many different things as you can to figure out what fits. So I think that's like a general good principle from consulting that I've brought in. And then I think the other one, which is maybe a bit more personal to me, is that I am, or have been, like a sort of recovering perfectionist, in so much as I've always been someone that likes to perfect everything before I show it to anyone. I like to be like, hello, this is great, this is like my perfect piece of work. But actually there's something about sharing imperfect things along the way so you can get as much feedback as possible, as you don't end up spending a whole bunch of time on something that ends up not quite being right. And that I've definitely brought through to the rest of my life, actually, is that, you know, you should really, and again, it comes back around to being nimble, but you should really try and ship things even when they're not perfect, and maybe utilize like that 80-20 rule, you know, just try and get it 80% there, doesn't have to be 100%, but see what that brings, and then divert and adjust and iterate from there.
I mean, I think all of those are really incredible points. I'm learning and kind of noting them down mentally as well, because it just really resonates with me, particularly the part of being kind of a perfectionist. I'm learning. I think, I guess it's also kind of the background that we've come from in medicine, where it's like you want to go to talk to people when you talk to a consultant or to a senior of some kind, you want to have like look like you've done most of the work, and you need them to answer one specific question. And there's less of like, I'm not entirely sure, I have an inkling, and can we work through this together? So it kind of teaches you like, well, you need to be able to present something perfectly. And I'm learning now, even, you know, working with other people or working with clients, you don't have to have everything together. In fact, it's better if you can pull other people in and to shape out your idea. You don't have to do it all alone. So yeah, really, really, really appreciate that thought. I mean, going back to what you were saying earlier about your experience when you were pregnant, and it was 2020, and we were talking a lot about kind of inequalities and racism and all of these things, and how that kind of fed into your thinking about what you'd want to do with Bloomful. I guess I want to talk a little bit about this kind of the kind of opposite thought of things, where we have to a certain extent have to shield ourselves from the negative rhetoric. You and I talked about this before, because there are a lot of shocking figures when it comes to the state of health outcomes, and also the lack of funding for solutions aimed at women and underrepresented groups, of which we fall into both of those camps. And you are actually someone who has, you know, made a success of Bloomful I know you're not entirely at your destination yet, but you're doing great so far, and you have been able to secure funding in spite of the statistics, which shows that it is possible. And I think it's really wonderful to see that kind of positive spin on things. So the obvious question to you, first of all, and I do have a less obvious question, but the obvious question, first of all, is do you have any kind of practical tips or advice on how you've been able to achieve this, being someone who comes from these groups that apparently can't get these kinds of things?
Yeah, I think it can be difficult when you're in a situation where you are surrounded by lots of, you know, I don't know if it's negative or just realistic, you know, narrative. And it's very easy to absorb a lot of that, internalize a lot of it, let it throw you off track, essentially, or even let it trick your mind into anticipating the outcome before you've actually tried or been able to get going. So that's something that I, for the most part, haven't been hugely affected by, in so much as I know that this is a problem that exists. I know that I'm as capable as the next person of at least trying to solve this problem in a way that is meaningful. And I've always focused on that rather than the statistics or anything. They definitely exist, and I've definitely been part of that statistic. But I think there's just something about really believing in what you're doing and your own ability to make a change, but also just showing by doing and actually just having the resilience that you need to just keep going and keep pushing forward, even if it's by a very small amount each time, and using that as the proof point that you need to bring people on board. In terms of practical tips, I have not by any stretch of the imagination nailed fundraising. It's not my big strength or anything. It's not something that I particularly enjoy doing. You know, it's a difficult one, and I've got a lot to learn on it still. I can share what has worked for me, which is, I think, first and foremost, I hate the N word, but networking has been really, is really the crux of a lot of fundraising. I mean, fundraising, raising funding. Okay, so let's just start, take one step back. I think when it comes to building a business and a startup, there are lots of different ways of funding it. One of which is actually making money through the business. Other things like grant funding, angel funding, VC funding. I mean, there's, I think everything gets lobbed into one big sector, but there's a lot of nuance when it comes to raising funding if you need it, or funding your startup. So the first thing is to really understand the structure of the sort of business that you're trying to build. Is it more of a lifestyle business? Is it more of a tech kind of fast growth, high stakes business? Is it, you know, something in between? You've really understanding the mechanism of what you're trying to deliver, because that will help to decipher what kind of funding you may need. There are lots of people that just build a business where they can start making money from day one, and that funds their business and they bootstrap it, which is fantastic. And then there are businesses where it's deep tech. You need to build something. You need engineers from day one. You need patents, and there's a lot of science around it. Or, you know, maybe it's biotech or whatever. And that requires a huge amount of funding potentially early on. And then when you look at funding, is it grant funding or is it VC funding? So there's a lot of nuance. I think there's a lot of research that should be done, as well as talking to other people to understand where you fit in that spectrum. And of course, what you're doing might change as well. So there's something about being nimble too. But if you are seeking outside funding, understanding, firstly, networking with, as I was saying, networking with other, not only investors, but also founders to who are doing similar, and getting a perspective on how it's been for them, who they've been in touch with, how they've done it. So just really learning from people around you, I think, is very, very important. But secondly, networking with investors, for better or worse, if that's who you're looking for money from, I think it's very important to know that it's relationships. It's not most people don't want to just be very transactional about things. About building a relationship and then really believing in you and your vision and your mission and what you're trying to deliver, and then believing that this is going to be a big thing that will return their money. You know, they want their money back at some point with more money on top. And they've got to really believe that you have the background and the tenacity and the resilience to do it. So they're not going to get that from one 30-minute phone call necessarily. So there's something around understanding the landscape of investors and going to, way before you even need money, develop those relationships and start talking. And some of that will involve going to events. Some of it will involve, you know, going through LinkedIn and sending out messages. Some will involve having chats like this even before you need investment or want investment, so you can start laying the foundation. So I think that's something that people sometimes don't get quite right, which is that you need to build a relationship. But second, another point is just being very clear on what you need the money for and why, how long it will last you, and what whichever investor it is, what they should expect in terms of return, roughly, so that you can be really confident when you are like seeking investment. Obviously, I think it goes without saying that having as much traction as possible when you're looking for investment is very important. So showing that you have tested the market, validated the market, put something out there, showing the resourcefulness that it requires to actually maybe get people starting to pay for a product. There's a whole bunch of traction areas as well. So I think there's like quite a few different categories. There's a lot to think about when it comes to investing, but I think thing is just getting amongst people who have done it and really learning from them.
What I'm hearing is that while we can focus on things that are outside of our control, there is actually so much that's within our control to do that can put us in the best position to be able to kind of receive the things that we need to make a success of what we're doing. So I think that's really, really empowering for people to hear. And I think that, my less obvious question, I guess, my deeper question that I want to ask you really is, you know, what do you think are the actions and qualities that we need to cultivate in ourselves ultimately to persist and achieve anything when the odds are apparently stacked against us?
So for me, the biggest one is resilience. I actually think it's something that should be discussed more in younger groups, in children, about just having a level of resilience within yourself. And that's a central piece, but there are lots of things that bolt onto that, like self-belief, tenacity. All of those fall into the same category of just essentially believing in what you're doing, regardless of what the outside world tells you, regardless of how many no's you get, because you will get many, many no's. And just being able to continue putting one foot in front of the other. I genuinely believe that one of the big reasons why people do fail at things, and my caveat is I don't consider myself to be like at the end or a success in the way that I want to be in any way, shape, or form yet. But one thing I have observed is that people do give up earlier than perhaps they could or should, you know. And obviously, different, and people have different reasons for throwing the towel. But sometimes, in some of those situations, I believe that if you continue going, you will eventually reach, you know, start to break down barriers and walls and reach, you know, where you need to go, essentially. But it requires just action every single day. And it requires resilience in terms of your mindset, in terms of your physical being, in terms of your vision and maintaining that vision day after day. That's to me is the part that sorts those that are able to get to the end of the journey and those that don't. And I think, yeah, self-belief and just knowing your worth and knowing what you're able to deliver and that you have something really positive to bring the world is also very important.
So you are entering a new chapter with Bloomful. You're developing a digital platform. What role do you see the digital platform playing in the kind of future growth and expansion of Bloomful, both in terms of your reach and your impact?
You know, so for me, I think women's healthcare is it's a broken area of healthcare. You know, it's an area that historically has been very under researched, undervalued, deprioritized consistently across time, and that has left us in a situation where we have very little data around women's health, and that leads into very little clinical knowledge in comparison to other areas of medicine. And like I said before, very long and chaotic journeys for women, which are very painful and can be very, negatively impacting on their lives. And also it's difficult for doctors as well to really understand how to manage these conditions. So mission and vision is around how to create a new world where we are able to deliver much more personalized, nuanced, and more streamlined healthcare journeys for women around their gynecological health. And how we're trying to do it at Bloomful is by creating a platform which collects patient-reported data, demographic information, symptom information, as well as quality of life scores from patients, and pulls that into a very cohesive and visual representation that doctors use in real time to drive their clinical decision making. So, you know, symptoms in women's health can be quite overlapping. They can be sometimes quite vague. Symptoms for endometriosis are quite similar to symptoms for adenomyosis, and there's crossover with many other conditions too. How do we build much more nuanced and much more granular databases by gathering information from women with these conditions and putting them into one cohesive platform that can be used by lots of medics to really standardize symptoms, but also understand where, when, and how to manage these patients, where to change treatment course, whether a particular treatment has had a positive impact or not. So that's what we're trying to do. And, you know, my vision is one where we can aggregate, consolidate, and organize the world's women's health data at scale in a way that's never been done before, and in a way that makes it useful for patients, for clinicians, and for researchers alike. To me, that's what we need to move the needle for the next generation. I think point solutions and delivering consultations is great, but what does the future look like for my daughter? How is her care going to be fundamentally and institutionally different? Of course, it starts with a platform, but the bigger vision, I think, has to be something much more profound, particularly for women's health. And so that's the vision that we kind of work towards. And I want women's health to just be health. I want women's healthcare, because that's the way it should be. I'm looking forward to that future state.
Yeah, me too. Being a mother oftentimes gives you a very, very strong motivation to do the work that you're doing. And, I'm really excited to see what you develop with this platform, with Bloomful. And, you know, to your point about femtech, I'm also hesitant to use this word as well. and I think I wasn't really sure why. I wasn't sure if I liked the word, but you really articulated why that is, that actually it's this kind of separation of women's healthcare from just healthcare in general. And us being kind of separated in a way from, like, you know, other systems that are just essential to our being. And I think that what you're doing right now is, you know, a really wonderful way for us to drive towards that future of it just being healthcare and viewed in the same way and researched in the same way as well. So very, very excited. So last question for you, and thank you so much for your time so far. I just want you to imagine for a moment that you are the dean of a university and can influence the curriculum in any way you see fit for students who will one day become healthcare and health tech professionals. What would you want them to learn about carving a path for themselves, and how would you want them to learn it to help them to lead more fulfilling and more impactful careers?
Oh, that's a very, very detailed question. And, you know, I've never been a teacher, so it's answered in a very structured way. One thing I would say, which has been an observation over the, 20 years, I guess, that I've been in healthcare. Don't know where that went, but anyway. I find healthcare in general to be a very, very sort of legacy industry. You know, it's very traditional. For the most part, you know, we've built the NHS in the last 70 odd years. We have had some new technologies in terms of scanning and other things in healthcare, which is great. But for the most part, it's practiced the same way now than it was like 100 years ago. And I think educational institutions tend to perpetuate and breed the same types, roughly, of people. And I think the biggest thing that I would want to implement if I was a university dean would be a different way of thinking. And that, again, is very, you know, we could cut up and we could slice and dice that in many different ways. But one thing is being more of a blue sky thinker, having a clearer view of what you believe the future state of healthcare needs to be, and working backwards from there. I think there's something around building people to look, creating doctors to fit into a system that already exists instead of creating people that can imagine a new system. And that's really what has led us to be in the scenario that we are in with healthcare in general, which is very, very slow moving, very lethargic, not open to new technologies. And, you know, the way that the world is moving, I think healthcare just hasn't kept up. You look at banking and fintech and just look at the progression over the last 10 years or so, and then you look at healthcare and see how much slower it's been. So I would want to foster a cohort of people, healthcare professionals, whatever, who they're able to think outside of what already exists, and they're able to imagine a new healthcare state. Because let's be honest, with every generation that goes by, the health system will need to mold and adapt to suit that generation and the next one. And I think this idea that it can just be one static thing hasn't worked for us because, as I say, we haven't moved quickly enough. You know, women have a different role than they did 20, 30, 40, 50 years ago. What are we doing in healthcare to account for that? I think we need to foster this idea of projecting ourselves forward, being blue sky thinkers, being doctors themselves and other health professionals, being much more nimble in how they're practicing and also in their ideas, and bringing those ideas to the forefront more, building systems to bring them to the forefront more. So, you know, it's a difficult question to answer, but I think people going forward, and if I was a dean, I would want to create a cohort of people who have a different way of thinking, more entrepreneurial, dare I say it, way of thinking, slightly more ambitious way of imagining our health system and what it could deliver in the future. I think that's the biggest thing that's missing, and that's the biggest thing that I would want to pull in.
Yeah, and I think you answered the question beautifully. I think I'm with you. I think it's all about culture. And I mean, that's part of the reason why I do what I do. And it's part of the reason why I have this podcast as well, is that I think that actually it's more of a cultural change that we need to bring about. And I think that starts with individuals and the way that they see what they have to contribute, essentially, and being able to imagine a different way of using what they know and what they can do to bring about change. So, I think it's an interesting question as to how do we create that kind of cultural change where we're not fitting people, trying to fit people into a system, but rather we're thinking about how can they help to make this system blossom in new and interesting and vital ways. So maybe we can dive into it more another time. But for now, thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you for having me. I've loved this chat and, you know, love your podcast. I think you're doing really great things. And I really enjoyed being on it today.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Brand New Doctor. I hope it inspired you in your personal journey. Check out the notes for a summary of the show with all of the important links. And if you enjoyed this,